The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 392, recorded on July 20th, 2015.
Welcome to the 392nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 225th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and often includes nifty little segments, but not this week.
This week we have another
special surprise.
Well, it's not a surprise if we already said his name, Paul.
That's true. He jumped his mark. Damn it.
No, he didn't jump his mark.
For planning.
Right. Anyway, otherwise, Scott Dirk, otherwise known as Alpha Shard, to people of a certain other podcast.
Mm-hmm. Alpha Shard! Buddy, what's going on?
Thank you guys for having me on. It's cool.
Okay. So, we did include some news that you might be interested in. I mean, well, the news was there, but you might be interested in it. But otherwise, moving on to what you've been playing. Go ahead, Paul.
I cannot stop playing Heroes of Might and Magic 2. I mean, I went on a trip to New York last week, and I swear to God, I think I spent more time playing that game than I did talking to my sister.
Really?
Who I had gone to visit.
So, how many of the campaigns have you finished from the expansion now?
2 out of 4.
I can't believe, because I never touched those expansions when I first bought that game. They were just too hard. I just dealt with making my own levels or maps.
I'm sure there's a difficulty setting you could lower.
Oh, no.
There really isn't.
No.
Oh, wow.
No, they just smack you down with dragons, and that's it.
it seems to me that there are different AI subroutines depending on what type of class your opponent is.
Yeah, but they don't make things easier on you, so. What have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Pillars of Eternity. I'm trying to finish it up in time for the expansion pack that's coming out. And I'm playing a little bit also of Castle of Illusion, which on Steam, which apparently plays a lot like Mario 64. It has that castle that you have to walk to the doors and pick a door to go into and get gems to unlock the next door.
Are you talking about that Mickey Mouse game, Castle of Illusion?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, it's a great game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's good. But it was just like, I was a little startled how like it was Mario 64 game, but it's cool, yeah.
Hmm. As for me, I haven't been playing anything after completing Batman Arkham Knight. And, you know, I am starting to really dislike a lot of open-world games, save one that we might be mentioning later, because, you know, the thing is that I have no interest in replaying Arkham Knight. I have no interest in playing Arkham City. I have no interest in playing Arkham Origins. I do replay the first game, Arkham Asylum, because it's a little more linear, and a lot of the plot beats go on, you know, as they should, you know, and it's a much more interesting story. I mean, when you go open-world, you sacrifice story. You know, because then you have to account for what the player is going to do. You know, and in this case, in Arkham Asylum, the story is stronger because, you know, there are beats to that story, and you know you really can't escape them. So, you know, anyway, aside from being a downer, we're going to move on. Well, actually, this is even more of a downer. Paul, why don't you take the first news item?
Nintendo CEO Shigeru Iwata passes away at age 55, and this comes to us from Fortune magazine. Japanese video game maker Nintendo Company Ltd.'s chief executive and president Shigeru Iwata, died on Saturday due to a growth in his bile duct, the company said. He was 55. The death of the hands-on CEO comes as the company expects to double annual operating profit in the year through March thanks to its long-awaited entry into smartphone games amid weak sales growth in the traditional consoles market. Iwata, who opposed the move into mobile until the last months of his life, underwent surgery in June last year to remove the growth and had resumed his duties after a brief period of recovery. He said in October that he had recovered well enough to resume his regular duties and that he felt healthier despite having lost weight. Iwata had been a director of Kyoto-based Nintendo since 2000 and was appointed president in 2002. He had also acted as CEO of the U.S. Unit since 2013. Iwata's death leaves senior managing directors Gento Tadika and Shigeru Miyamoto as representative directors. Nintendo's shares were up about 1% in line with the broader Tokyo market. They have risen over 50% since the start of the year as investors have warmed to the company's change in strategy. Presiding over a news conference in May to announce Nintendo's full-year financial results, Iwata said that the company's long-awaited entry into smartphone games would help it double annual operating profit in the next year through March.
You know, it's really strange because in the last episode, by the way, some people may notice that we seem to have skipped an episode going straight from 390 to 392. We did not skip an episode. Actually, we recorded an episode which was extremely light in content, and I've decided to reserve
it. And you decided to not post it?
Yeah, but here's the thing is that I didn't want to also, you know, delay the ticker on your countdown there, Paul. So it's going to be posted at some week in which, you know, when we don't have, you know, when we want to take a break, you know, maybe in like 4 weeks or so. It not only had a lot of Paul's discussion of My Little Pony, but it also discussed Iwata and Shigeru Miyamoto talking about stuff in a investor call, and it's just really strange to have right after we post that news item, Iwata dies. You know, it's just a little bit weird.
Oh my God! Do you think the podcast is the equivalent of the Death Note?
Oh, don't say that.
Don't.
We're immune. We're doing the talking.
The other thing is that I find it interesting. I did not know that Nintendo had moved into smartphones. That's something that escaped past me. I also didn't know that Iwata.
How did that escape you?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to Nintendo smartphone games, I guess. But it's interesting that Iwata had opposed it for so long, and when he finally said, okay, it's like an explosive, you know, thing for Nintendo's growth. I mean, like a year ago, I think Iwata said that smartphones were Nintendo's competitor, not, you know, and they were competing with smartphones and not the Sony Vita, you know, because smartphones were where it's at. And, you know, Paul, you're more plugged in. What have they been doing on smartphones?
They've not released anything on smartphones yet.
Then how do they make...
They've made the announcement that it's happening.
Oh, okay.
They've made the announcement that things are in production, but nothing has been released yet. Otherwise, guess who'd have been first in line?
Scott?
Probably Shigeru Iwata, but then would be me.
Yeah, I thought there were some Final Fantasy games. I think my wife has a couple on the mobile phone, but I'm not sure how that's...
I don't think Nintendo owns Final Fantasy.
Oh, okay, that's probably why.
Square owns Final Fantasy.
Right.
And also, how come there's this whooshing noise when you start speaking?
I'm sorry, it's the fan or...
Oh.
And I'm not sure.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean... I swear, if I don't think it's going to come, but if Pokemon came to smartphones, that would be it. I mean, that would be record sales right there, because I think Pokemon was made for iPhones. Especially if you could use the iPhone's phone capability or text capability or whatever to do things with Pokemon on a smartphone. Well, you said you'd be first in line. What is your interest in a Nintendo smartphone game?
I just want to see what they're going to come up with.
Okay.
It's purely for research purposes.
Yeah, sure. "Quote unquote research." Scott, are you interested in Nintendo smartphone games?
I'd rather just keep them on the 3DS, but if it helps them get more money and you know, hopefully develop better games or just develop more games, and yeah, I'm all for it. You know.
You know, that makes me wonder: is Nintendo going to make typical Nintendo properties on smartphones, or are they going to do original IPs? That's the question, really.
So that's really, I think, what everybody's waiting to find out about, is whether they're going to port existing games or come up with new content.
New content would be good, I think, all around, really, for Nintendo.
Yeah, that was Paul's issue last week. In the podcast that no one heard, Paul went off on Nintendo's, quote-unquote, unoriginality, or what, you know, because we discussed E3, right? And Paul was just... Yeah.
I agree with Paul on that issue, that Nintendo seems to have left us both behind, honestly. They went on to the younger crowd.
Yeah, I'm really not happy with them leaving behind somebody who's giving them thousands upon thousands of dollars over the course of a 30-year relationship.
Here, I agree.
So, as a
don't even get me started on the number of T-shirts I'm giving their licensees.
So, as a sneak preview or retro review or whatever, why don't you recount some of what you said in episode 391 about having to deal with Nintendo's offering at E3 when you were at the booth?
It was just seemed like a misallocation of floor space. It seemed like they only wanted to include, first party IP titles. But that they didn't really have that many of them. So it just kind of made it feel really sparse compared to, Sony's booth by comparison, which was crammed full of kiosks to play just about every third-party game coming out in the next 10 months. I mean, a Rockstar programmer that I went to school with has had his game on display there, and he's working for a third-party company making a title called Drawn to Death.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's ever heard of his company, but people have heard of, Tim Schafer, who's in charge of the company. And, yeah, they had, it's a really small shop he's part of, but they had the same kind of presence as a third-party company that's been around for 20 years. So it just kind of seemed like other booths were done so that, everybody was kind of raised up to like one homogenous level and kind of made it seem more full. Whereas everything in Nintendo's booth was, we are the four Nintendo tent poles. Look at the company we're holding up.
Well, the thing is that, they had rows of 3DSs that no one was touching. I mean, they were showing games that either people didn't care about or games that had already been released so. There was nothing new there. The only thing that mildly interested me, and Paul knows this, was the Mario level editor, that game, quote-unquote game, which allows you to create Mario levels. So I mean, that was the only thing that really spiked my interest even a little bit there.
Yeah, and even that, it just seemed like the coolest thing about that was that it would tell you where Mario would jump or propel to if he landed on something, so that you could see shadow arcs that way. And time those really sick jumps. But, yeah, it's just that's not really a game, in my opinion. That's more of like a tool set. That's more of like, here, Johnny, go have some Legos. Make your own fun. And that's not what I would want to spend $70 on.
I think that's fine. I think a level editor is great, especially if you could share it with friends and, over the internet, I guess Nintendo still has issues with that, to really share their stuff online, but if they could do that, everybody, just be able to play different people's levels and see really crazy stuff that people come up with, I think that'd be great.
I might be a little jaded because, that's what I do for a living. I mean,
you felt threatened about other people making levels.
To do that. Not the other way around.
It just occurred to me, I wonder if the reason why Nintendo's floor was a little bit light was because they are working on the new console. This is not speculation. There actually are the NX, codenamed NX. And I'm wondering if they can't show everything because a lot of their big games are being made for the NX, and they obviously couldn't have shown them here at E3 2015. So
I would suppose that they would be made in tandem the same way that Twilight Princess was.
That's true. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Kojima's name removed from Metal Gear Solid 5 cover, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Konami has removed Hideo Kojima's name and Kojima Productions logo from Metal Gear Solid 5 box art, yet more evidence that the publisher and its most prominent creator have parted ways. The differences between the game's final box art and its previous iteration were spotted by the eagle-eyed denizens of NeoGAF. What will we do without NeoGAF? Kojima's name was now completely gone from the cover, and that follows removal of his name from Metal Gear Solid's previous promotional channels back in March. And there's more. Earlier this month, a voice actor who had portrayed Snake in the Japanese versions of Metal Gear Solid Atos Otsuka said that the Kojima Productions had been disbanded. According to the tweet, he said, Kojima Productions was forced to disband, but it appears that the work that the team has been putting their utmost effort into is nearly complete. But if this is the end, Metal Gear Solid is immortal. The situation stretched beyond the Metal Gear Solid franchise, too, with Konami also canceling Silent Hills, which Kojima was developing for the director with director Guillermo del Toro. Silent Hills, you know, every time I hear that, I keep on thinking about Elvira's Haunted Hills. I don't know why. It's just...
Oh, that was such a bad sequel.
But still, you know, I hear Silent Hills, I think of Elvira, and that's just wrong. Or right.
You know what? Really, anyone who has an excuse to think of Elvira, really, kudos in my book. Yeah. Any excuse will do.
And despite all the smoke, Konami has yet to officially confirm the existence of a fire. I guess they're referring to there's a lot of smoke, so... it is tempting to frame the situation between Konami and Kojima as one aspect of a larger shift within the country, specifically towards mobile, as a more important part of its product mix. I don't buy that. We've seen this dance before. You know, we've seen it before, and this was actually a story like 2 weeks ago or two episodes ago. And it's, you know, and me and Paul agreed. You know, there was a lot of fire there, but not quite enough evidence. I mean, voice actors are usually the biggest spoilers of all. They always don't seem to understand. You're not supposed to talk about this stuff. You know, you're under NDA, and they do anyway. You know, like when that voice actress sort of spoiled the fact that in Assassin's Creed they were actually inside a simulation and not actually in ancient Middle East. You know, and all that stuff.
To be fair, though, I have seen some rather clever marketing plans. Where if they have somebody of note in their voice cast, that it's been planned that they'll let something slip at such and such an event.
Yeah,
because there's a response to that ready to go.
The intentional leak that happens.
Yeah, the intentional leak.
But I don't see why that would actually benefit this game to remove Kojima's name and the developer from the box. You know. But this is major news because Kojima's done a lot of stuff.
So he'll probably move on to other projects.
You know, that's the problem, though. We don't know what the story is behind this. Because if Kojima's been a pain in the ass, that sort of stuff gets around fast, you know, in the grapevine. Paul, I'm pretty sure that you've heard the grapevine. You know, you hear this person's an asshole, don't work with him, that sort of stuff.
I'm sure that I would at some point.
Right.
Not that I have like a pile of names to
right, but,
like,
you know,
dish out like that at the moment. But I'm sure that if I were ever in a hiring manager position where I was looking to assemble a team,
I would
pretty much know. I would at the very least know somebody who knows one of this person's contacts.
I just mean, you know, but there is that grapevine though, and right.
Right, so I mean, I would almost guarantee that if I were looking to staff a job in Los Angeles, I know someone who knows one of this person's references. So two people away.
Yeah. So.
Well, I don't know what will happen with Kojima, because I don't know enough about the guy. Like what Paul said, so it has to be somebody in the industry, but. I think this will also change Metal Gear itself as well. Somebody else is going to have to take over it, its creative vision.
Right, because, you know, Konami owns the IP.
Right.
Kojima doesn't. And, you know, the thing is that Kojima is a bit of a prankster, you know. He likes to tease a lot of stuff. I mean, there was an Easter egg in the demo in which you could shine a flashlight on various Metal Gear games and make them vanish. You know, I don't know. Some people are thinking that was an Easter egg made by Kojima, indicating that he wasn't going to be a part of the series much longer. He's a strange guy, and I can imagine where he would ruffle some feathers.
It does sound like that. Unless you think this is like some. Like if you're taking the game a little too seriously, and you think it's like a conspiracy, and he's just mind screwing with people to make it seem like he's not going to be in it to, I don't know, hike up sales or something with the game itself.
Well, you know, the thing is that he claimed that there was not going to be a Metal Gear Solid 5, and there was not going to be a Metal Gear Solid 5. Oh, by the way, there's a Metal Gear Solid 5. I'm wondering if this is sort of like Andy Kaufman, and this breakup is fake, and then, like, 2 years later, it's like, Metal Gear Solid 6, produced by me, you know, or something weird like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
So we're going to move on to the next item, Scott. You can take this one.
Okay. Fallout 4 is about freedom, not being the best-looking game, says Bethesda. This is from GamesRadar. The debut of Fallout 4 at E3 2015 featured some crisp and colorful new visuals, but that isn't distressed by developer Bethesda. According to Pete Hines, we push it visually as much as we can, while realizing that we are not making a game just for the sake of having it be the best looking out there. It's not meant to be the most stunning RPG ever. That's not the stated goal, he explains. We want this massive interactive world where you can talk to people, choose your own path, and everything in the world has meaning and is an actual object. Bethesda wants a good looking game, but also one where things physically exist. Everything in the world is something tangible. You don't walk into a room and see lots of stuff and it's all fake. All the items are actual items, states Hines. You set off a grenade in the room, it's going to blow stuff around and knock it all over the place. You have to spend cycles and stuff tracking where all of that went and how it's going to bounce around. It does allow for chaos, but it'll also allow somebody to roll 1,000 wheels of cheese down a hill in Skyrim. I remember that. That was hilarious. And you laugh. It's fun. You have the freedom, and you also have a much better sense of place, because everything that you're touching and picking up is real. These are real books and a real apple. It's not a picture of an apple that disappears from the world. You can pick it up from here and set it down over here. We know what it is that we're trying to do, and it's not just one thing, says Hines. It's all these parts that make a much bigger whole. It's interactivity and it's visuals, but the visuals without sacrificing all the other stuff. Which sounds awesome.
Yeah, Scott, I know that you're a little bit interested in this game.
Very.
So, yeah, go on, keep going.
Okay. This makes me very interested because I remember when seeing the previews for this game, wondering if I was going to be able to even play it, you know, if it was going to need a new graphics card. And then I saw this article basically saying it's not focusing on being the highest graphics possible, so you know I might even be able to not have to upgrade, which is great. But I really love this, the detail they're going in on this. You know, you have all these items you can really scavenge around and pick up and make use of, and probably take back to your little settlements that you can make, and set up all these different network trades, and everything probably has value. You can probably pick up all sorts of debris and sell it in a marketplace or something. It get really crazy and detailed.
You know, the one thing that people also noticed regarding the graphics is that it has a lot more color to it. You're still going to have the browns and grays if you're in a wasteland, but there's also a lot of greens and reds and yellows and blues, you know, so it isn't quite as monochromatic as Fallout 3 was. You know, this one...
It's a little less depressing and maybe a little hopeful, a little, you know, just having all that color just feels more energetic. You feel like you want to play the game, because, there's a wasteland, you still see devastation and broken stuff everywhere, but the color, I think, helps bring more life to it and just feel like, you know, there's something to be rebuilt, and building settlements just makes you feel like you're rebuilding civilization, which just sounds really cool.
You know, the thing is that there was a there is a link to Fallout 3, and that is Boston is where, and this is taking place in New England. Boston is where that institute is, where they make robots, you know, androids. And if you remember in Fallout 3, there was this entire quest in which you had to deal with this android. You know, you had to decide whether to send him back or whatever. You know, and this is, I'm pretty sure we're going to see plenty of androids in this game. I'm wondering if you're going to have a do androids dream of electric sheep sort of plot somewhere in there.
No, there's definitely a cybernetic suit that you can jump into, a mech suit. So I did see some of that. That was awesome.
Yeah, and if you're wondering why Paul's so silent, it's that he did not like Fallout 3.
That's fine.
it's just not really my genre.
Yeah.
I tend
not to like just about any game with guns, except for rare exceptions, like Ratchet and Clank or the original Bioshock.
But Paul, this game had ray guns. You had that one alien ray gun that could kill a Deathclaw in like one or two shots.
And yet, a one or two shot gun, which exists in just about every game that has guns, not really a major selling point for me as a player to that genre.
The other thing, which has a lot of people excited, is that this is Fallout 3 plus Minecraft. They're really stressing the crafting aspect of this.
Which is what I really love, and that's really attracting me to this game, being able to build stuff. I mean, I guess that's why I like that the idea of that Mario level editor. You can build a level.
Well,
and I just love building.
Keep in mind, you could craft a little bit in Halo in Fallout 3, but it's not to this degree.
Right. I saw like there was some really crazy customization going on with the weapons. They had to do like a fast forward, just showing the gun morphing into different things and all the different attachments and customers. It just looked crazy.
And most importantly, you can still shoot teddy bears at people.
Yep.
you can have your teddy bear cannon, and just get someone exploding into jibs because they got hit by a teddy bear. So, anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul. Shenmue.
Shenmue 3 breaks Kickstarter video game record, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Ynet's Shenmue 3 is now the most successful game in the relatively brief history of Kickstarter, inching past the previous record holder with just hours left on the clock. Koji Igarashi's Bloodstained has that honor for little more than a month, but Shenmue 3 now has eclipsed its total of 5.5 million, with 13 hours still to go. The new target to which game Kickstarters must aspire will be confirmed by the time we sit down to breakfast tomorrow. In terms of Kickstarter's gaming category as a whole, however, Shenmue 3 is still far short of the record, which currently belongs to Exploding Kittens, a freakishly successful card game that raised $8.7 million on its target of $10,000. I'm in the wrong line of work, man. I gotta start making card games. If anything, Shenmue 3 didn't fulfill the potential it showed in its first few days, when it toppled records for the speed with which the donations poured in. The momentum was significant for Yaoshik 2, the series' reverse creator.
Revered. Come on, Paul.
Don't make fun of the dyslexic. Reading out loud, it's a trickier thing than you people give it credit for. To publicly make the bold claim that he would need $10 million for Shenmue 3 to, quote, truly have the features of an open world, at $5 million, he said, Ynet would be able to release one of the features he really wanted to include. Shenmue 3 may ultimately receive the $10 million treatment. Sony is assisting with several areas of the game's production and marketing, and there's no particular reason that if it or another third party wouldn't supply the resources necessary to make Shukui's Broader Vision a reality.
Broader Vision. Suzuki.
Broader Vision.
You know, I know, Paul, you're probably seething at this because, once again, you know, there's a certain amount. I mean, I know you're thinking, wait, you have $5 million and it's not going to be enough to make a game? Or $5.5 million? Because
it depends on the scale of the game.
Well, here's the thing. Remember, Broken Age, Tim Schafer recently said that Broken Age is finally going to break even though they had the top mark for a video game ever at $2.8 million, I think it was, or something like that. And then they actually had to go into early access because they didn't have enough money to complete the game, even with that money set behind. So, you know, is there... I don't know. It just seems a little bit wasteful to me that they could say, oh, you know, we have what were they? They were aiming for $10 million? Really? I mean...
That's a really high margin to aim for. Yeah, I think Paul had a good point on one of the previous episodes where he's listening. We're saying that people need to know how to manage some money and divvy out to what tasks need to be done. And $10 million, just... You can't do it with $10 million. What are you doing?
Well, you can't do it. Well, they're saying they couldn't do it with 5.5 million.
All
right. And they need 10 million for it. But getting back to Exploding Kittens, this is a game, and it's a basic card game in which you're actually throwing, you're doing kitten bombs, you know, and different kinds of cards, you know, in which kittens have machine guns and kittens can explode and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I mean that 8.78 million from 10,000 when your goal is $10,000. I think you can. It's a little bit easier to imagine your money when you're only 800,000% over your line there. So, did anybody here actually enjoy Shenmue games, which are basically?
Go ahead. I haven't played them, so sorry to say that.
Yeah, I just haven't had the privilege.
It was the Japanese Grand Theft Auto before Grand Theft Auto, in terms of being an open world game, in which you could do things like the main character Shenmue 2 could actually spend time working a forklift and just loading things into a warehouse, you know, all these mundane things to make money, sort of like Fable, you know, and it was famous for just having that story within a story, you know, so it's basically where a lot of DNA from Grand Theft Auto was. So we're going to move on to the next item. Over 50% of parents worry about their children playing video games online, and this comes to us from videogamer.com. According to a new study conducted by advice website Get Safe Online, which surveyed 2,000 parents with kids aged 5 to 18 years old, 91% of parents allow their children to play games online despite more than half of them worrying about their online safety. 37%, however, feel that they have, quote-unquote, no control over their child's online gaming, with a third acknowledging that their kids play online at least once a day. 25% of parents are aware that their children are having 25% of parents are aware of their children having disclosed personal information while playing online too, with 16% stating that they are aware their child is being bullied or verbally abused online. In reality, that last figure could be even higher, says Get Safe Online. In most cases, online gaming is fun, social, and harm-free, says the site, advice website. But we need to be realistic that kids are naturally going to want to play games with their friends, but parents are right to be showing some concern about a world they are perhaps not familiar with them. This is what I get for correcting Paul.
Making fun of me.
I didn't make fun of you. I just corrected you. But parents are right to be showing a concern about a world they are perhaps not familiar with themselves, commented Get Safe Online CEO Tony Neat. The risks range from downloading a computer virus to bullying and even being targeted by an older predator with more sinister motives. Neat advises parents, quote, need to be switched on and have an open and honest conversation with their children, making sure they are mature enough to play games online in the first place and are aware of threats and right gaming practices from the off. The site also recommends that children don't respond to online bullying and that parents ensure that they check each game's age rating. The one thing that confuses me is why are they doing a survey with kids 5 to 18 years old? That's, you know, are you telling me that you would monitor a kid who's 5 years old the same as you would 18? You can't lump in those two age groups. I mean, there are late teens, right? And there are young teens and preteens. You know, you can't lump them all in one big thing. I mean, an 18-year-old is going to have an online experience that's going to be vastly different than, say, a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old or even a 10-year-old.
The 18-year-old's also going to know how to do things more than the 5-year-old is going to know. The 18-year-old's going to have access to more things. Yeah. The 5-year-old's still learning computers.
So you have to take, you have to take that with a grain of salt. Although, you know, 18-year-olds can get bullied too. I mean, but I just think that kids who are on, say, who are 14 and older, have a different mindset than you would having a young child going online. Yeah. And I would be nervous about having a 6 or 7 year old being playing online games. Paul?
Dude, games are everywhere. You can't stop kids from playing games these days unless you're willing to lock up just about every electronic device in your house.
Well, this is different. This is playing online. This is not, just playing a game. You know, this is actually interacting with other people online, it seems like.
Well, I mean, what constitutes playing online? I mean, Heyday has a substantial amount of social features.
I
My neighborhood buddies and I coordinate to fill tasks.
I think that's what they're focusing on is the social aspects, you know. I think they're focusing on interacting online, not just playing online games, but playing with other people online.
Right, but I mean, the point is that, like, you know, any iDevice will do that. Any Android or 3DS, or I mean, you can do it with almost anything that has that you plug in these days.
Yeah, I just think, you know, the best solution is if your kid is really young, you know, 5 to 9 years old, just play with them, you know. If they're going to play online, play with them online. I mean, they're not gonna push you away and say, no, this, I want to do it myself. As a matter of fact, they're more likely to ask an adult, what am I supposed to do now? You know?
Yeah, that's just how my daughter is. She'll, like, when we're playing games together right now, we're playing Fantasy Life on the 3DS, and that's only for local players, so nobody else can join. And I would monitor her when she was playing, like, Little Big Planet with other people, watching what she was doing there, and, like, because one of the aspects I didn't like on Little Big Planet is you could slap people, and it didn't have any puzzle reasons for in the game. You just slap people, and I would always tell her, I better not hear any slapping, you know, just try to get her to interact with people better than just,
well, you could shatter people in Lego, I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Paul?
Yeah, I don't understand. Here's my problem. These parents who are now worrying are the first generation that were raised where video games were already a thing.
Yeah. I mean, there is a term called gamer dads and gamer moms now.
Right. I mean, granted, these people might be a little younger, you know, so, like, I definitely think that maybe, well, I don't want to say Jonah's age, because I mean the only other person would be Methuselah.
I'm gonna hit you now.
Hey, that's what you get for that dyslexia crack.
Hey, wait a minute. You said it, not me.
I was reminding you. Let's see. Alphashard, how old are you?
I'm nearly 40.
All right, so that's what I'm thinking. In between my age and Scott's age.
Okay.
I'm thinking that is the first generation where video games are already a thing. Because I remember when video games were not a thing.
Yeah. I do remember that those days. Just
but like very big. I mean, I was still playing with Fisher Price Little People when that happened.
Yeah. Playing with the Legos, playing with all the other toys, and then suddenly Commodore 64 and Atari comes along and you start playing that, and then you're on your Packard Bell or Tandy.
I think I got my Atari 64. Was Atari 64?
Your Atari 64.
I think I got my Atari 2600 for my second Christmas.
Hmm.
Like my parents were immigrants and they pushed technology on everything. So.
Well, now you're designing stuff. So, you're in the industry now. So that had some effect.
Hopefully.
But, you know, 91% of these parents are allowing them to do it anyway, you know. So they are aware, you know, they're not, you know, restrictive. You know, they understand, you know, that they understand the concept of being online. They're just worried about what their children are doing. You know, I think if I read this article right.
Yeah, it sounds like they don't know what to do. And I think the best advice in there is to, talk to your kids and find out the games they're playing and they want to play and play with them and, just interact with them more. And like Paul said, you know, be responsible for your kids.
You know, I'm wondering.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I don't understand why all this worry when it's not like something new. Like these parents grew up with this stuff.
Well,
I mean, unless we're talking about like parents of what, 14 to 18 year olds? But that doesn't even really make sense. I mean, Zelda's 25.
Like, that's true.
This is not new.
Well, online.
How old could these children possibly be that the parents are concerned?
You know, I think it's more related to worrying about who your kids are talking to, you know, and that's been around forever.
Yeah.
You know,
a different issue, though.
But, you know, it's like they don't know who their kids are talking to. You know, I would just say, listen, no matter what, never give up your name, your email, or your phone, you know. Just keep all that information secret, you know. To them, you're whatever your pet username is or whatever it is.
I mean, I got to go back to, you know, citing once again the great advice of parenting style of my favorite aunt. If there were no secrets. If either of my cousins like closed a window as she was approaching on their computer, they lost their computer time. Like there was a zero tolerance policy, and you know what? That's just a Ukrainian immigrant thing, because well, you know, we might fuck you up emotionally, but we'll be damned if we're gonna let somebody take you physically.
Scott?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I would do. I would pay attention. Like, she used to play like Fat Princess, and you gotta pay attention to your kids and, you know, monitor them, have a conversation with them, and you can't just ignore them. And I like what your aunt did. You know, you try to hide something, you take it away. And so, I mean, like, yeah, you can password protect a lot of your stuff. I mean, I have my computer's password protected, so she can't go on it unless I, you know, let her, make sure that I know what she's doing.
And you know what? Not for nothing. Part of this fear comes with parents buying their children or trying to placate their children with hardware that is inappropriate for their age group
and shouldn't be used as a babysitter.
Thank you. I mean, we were all told that like the television wasn't a babysitter.
Yeah,
you
know, no.
And I don't understand how we didn't learn the same lesson with an iPad.
Oh, in my day it was the radio. So.
In your day, it was the stone tablet. Who are you kidding?
Well, I would stare at a stone tablet just like, ooh. I shouldn't be looking at this.
It's not an abacus?
Well, I mean, once the cuneiform came along.
Cuneiform. Now I'm going to pick on you. Because it's online bullying.
This is not bullying. This is ageism. It's different. I'm younger than you.
Look for our look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our history. Damn it. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. You can follow Jonah, Paul, and Scott at Jonah Falcon, at Stager Monkey, and at Alpha Shard. So short episode, but that's because we don't have any gaming flashbacks or letters.
But, I mean, it was more important for us to gel as a cohesive unit.
Yeah.
Yes. I liked it. It was a good episode. Good
I mean, other than some volume issues on my end, I feel like I'm shouting.
Really? You sound normal to me.
Well, I think it might just be because Scott sounds really dim to me. Not, like, unintelligible, but, like, he sounds really low in volume.
Sorry, I tend to talk low. I don't know if it's...
That just makes it easier for me to talk over you, so I don't know if that's a strategy you want to stick with.
But yeah. So, anyways, this has been Scott's review, and we recommend that all Scott's friends write in and tell us what you think.
And tell us what you think of our newest podcaster.
Because the thing is that, you know, with AlphaShot gone, that's one reader that's gone now.
Dude, Scott, you're gonna have to fill like a good 10 minutes of banter time.
Just to cover
the fact that you're not gonna be writing in anymore.
No, this reminds me of when improv groups, you know, they tell their friends, you know. For $5 for every, what's it called? Have all their friends come in. So at least there's a crowd, you know?
Oh no. When I was in improv, I would tell my friends things to call out when we were asking for stuff.
No, I mean, but it, just to have people there, it's like everybody has to bring two of their friends or family to the show, you know?
Same like, thing okay, with comedy. Now when they ask for a location, say the moon.
I'll make sure to spread word on my Facebook and Twitter and let people know that I just recorded on the show. So
Paul,
hopefully.
You know, you did improv. You should know. No negation.
I didn't negate anything. You did.
You negate everything.
This isn't improv.
Well, in a way it is, sort of. Oh, and cool. Scene. Anyways, we will be back next week, and you know, there's going to be a lot of editing on my part, and it's the painful part for me. So, everybody, we will see
you. That falls into the category of not my problem.
Well, it isn't Paul's problem, it's my problem.
Well, yeah. See, I mean, no, but I mean, Scott, that's why I don't complain about anything about this show, really, with any seriousness, because if I wanted to, if I, if I was really that bothered by something, I could take on the task of learning how to do it myself. But I don't. I mean, Jonah does all of the editing. He does all of the news gathering. I just show up and be myself. I mean, that's the really big insight secret there is any of my complaints are never actually heartfelt.
Anyways.
Don't you dare air that.
Uh-oh. Well, now you're forcing me to air that. See, that's the problem. You tell me not to air it, I have to air it. It's not like you're airing your phone number or your postal address. You're just saying, don't have anything of me complimenting Jonah, because it'll make people's eyes explode.
Jonah, however did you get that bonsai buddy to sound just like me? You can make that thing say anything you want.
Yes, reputation.
Oh, baby.
Right. Okay, so remember, hate mail for Paul. Hate mail for Paul, since he's obviously fishing for it right now. Except the problem is he's not supposed to get hate mail from me. He's supposed to get hate mail from other writer.
No, I get hate texts at 5 in the morning from you.
That you're not supposed to wake up and answer it, and it's 8 o'clock for me here.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying. I'm all like,
and it wasn't hate text. I was just asking you if you were up for if you were ready for today.
Yeah, if I was ready for today at 5 in the morning.
We're not doing podcasts at 5 in the morning, trust me. Not unless there was a really wild night the night before.
And in that, much bed.
And there would be a lot of alcohol involved.
No, see, the real kicker is that I'm still awake from having tried to meet a 9 a.m. deadline. And succeeding, by the way.
Ooh. Yeah. Too bad we have to have an NDA on that, so...
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I was writing an asset list, and like I said, I was coming back from New York, so I kind of had to juggle things, and I had a layover that was supposed to be 3 hours, and it turned into like 6, and it's like, I can't do my work at the airport. Like, it's just not going to be a quality product.
Nah, it's only $10 per minute of Wi-Fi at the airport.
Well, I mean, the point is I literally have not slept since I got up Saturday in New York.
Wow.
So add in the time difference and the fact that Sunday. I didn't sleep since Sunday. Today's only Monday.
So anyways, we will see you next week.